Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Prateek, and today I will be talking about leveraging private information retrieval to scale anonymous communication systems such as Thor. This is joint work with recently turned doctors, Femi and Carmela from Waterloo and UN respectively, as well as Nikita and Ian from Illinois and Waterloo. I'll begin with a brief introduction to anonymous communication. So anonymous communication allows a user to communicate with a recipient while keeping its user identity, which is typically an IP address, secret from third parties on the internet, like ISPs or internet routers, or even a recipient, in this example, Google. Anonymous communication systems are now mainstream. For instance, Thor is a deployed system for anonymous communication. Initially deployed in 2003, it now serves more than a quarter of a million users every day. Thor is used for evading censorship. It's used by whistleblowers, dissidents, and finally, also by ordinary citizens like you and me to preserve our online privacy. So let's see how Thor works briefly. The Thor network is comprised of roughly about 2,000 volunteer servers. So in this figure, 9 represents 2,000. And their entities called trusted directory authorities, which keep track of which servers are online at any moment. This information is propagated to entities called directory servers for further distribution to the clients. So clients download this list of servers from directory servers, and then select three relays, which are known as guard relays, and this selection is made to defend against certain attacks on anonymity. So these guard relays are typically highly available relays, and each user chooses a different set of three guard relays. So the point I want to highlight about guard relays is that once this selection is made, the set of three guard relays is fixed for all future users. Now, for anonymous communication, a client builds a chain of these relays to a recipient. So the first relay on this path is always chosen from this set of guard relays, while the second and the third relay are chosen at random from this complete list. So as you can see in this example, the Thor path is typically three hops. The second hop is known as a middle relay, and the last hop is known as an exit relay. Now, Thor imposes certain constraints on how the middle and the exit relay are selected. So for example, these relays are chosen with the probability that's proportional to the available bandwidth, and this is done in order to load balance the system. Another constraint is that the exit policy of the third hop must allow traffic to the port that the user is interested in. So for example, if a user is performing some web browsing, then the final exit relay must allow forwarding to port 80. So this brings me to the scalability problem in the Thor network. So recall that each user in the system must download this full list of all the servers that are online from directory servers. Now, as the number of servers in the network increases, and because of churn, maintaining a global view of the system becomes very costly. So for example, in the current Thor network, this list is updated every 3 hours. So in fact, Nick Hopper's group recently showed that in the near future, the Thor network will spend more bandwidth just in maintaining this global view of the system than for anonymous communication itself. So this illustrates the need for solutions that do not require a user to maintain a global system view. So indeed, several solutions have been proposed that aim to alleviate the scalability problems in the Thor network. A common thread behind all of these solutions is that they advocate a peer-to-peer paradigm, since peer-to-peer systems have been shown to scale to millions of users. So another common thread behind all of these systems is that all of them have been broken. While some of these systems have reportedly been fixed, this highlights the uncertainty in these designs. The security community today does not have any faith in the anonymity properties provided by any of these systems. And the reason for this is that even system designers themselves find it very hard to rigorously argue the security properties of these designs because of their distributed, dynamic, and very complicated protocols. So in this work, we take a step back from the peer-to-peer paradigm and instead advocate a scalable client-server approach. So we hope to come up with an architecture in which it is very easy to analyze the security properties of the proposed design. So in particular, we aim to avoid increasing the attack surface of our design, and we will show that our design provides equivalent security to for the current Tor network. Moreover, we will preserve the constraints that Tor embeds in its protocol. For example, we will respect the notion of guard, middle, and exit relays, and also support load balancing. And finally, we advocate making only minimal changes in the Tor network. For example, our proposed design only makes changes to the relay selection and the directory server functionality. So this brings me to the key observation in our design. So recall that to build the circuit for anonymous communication, a user needs to know only the information about one middle and one exit relay. So a typical lifetime of such an anonymous path or anonymous circuit is roughly 10 minutes. So over a 3-hour interval, which is the interval after which the list of relays changes at the directory service, a client needs information only about 18 middle and 18 exit relays. So this brings up the question, why are users downloading all 2,000 relays information? So consider this naive approach of downloading only selected information from directory servers. So this runs into the problem of malicious directory servers, which can collude with other entities in the network to break the anonymity of the user. So consider the following example. So here, a user, Bob, contacts a directory server and downloads information only about relay number 10 and 25. So the directory server responds with the IP address and other information about the relay. Next, the user uses this information to build a circuit for anonymous communication. Now, if the exit server and the directory server are malicious and colluding, then the exit server knows that somebody who has knowledge of relays 10 and 25 is communicating with Google, while the directory server knows that, hey, the user Bob has information about relays 10 and 25. So thus, the adversary can make the inference that the user is very likely to be Bob. Thus, what is really required is to download selected relay information from directory servers without telling the directory servers what we asked for. And we know this is exactly what private information retrieval protocols were designed to do. And thus, in this work, we call for combining the technologies of private information retrieval and Tor to improve the performance in the Tor network. I will now present some brief background on private information retrieval. So private information retrieval has two flavors. The first flavor is called information theoretic PIR. So information theoretic PIR is a multi-server protocol. So in this example, in the figure to your right, there are three servers, A, B, and C, and these servers have an identical copy of the database. Now some of these servers can be malicious and can try to figure out, and are trying to figure out what the client is downloading. However, the information theoretic PIR protocol guarantees that as long as a threshold number of servers are honest, so in this case, that threshold can be set to 1, and since the relay C is honest, the malicious servers A and B will have no information about what the client downloaded. The client's requests appear as black boxes to these servers, and their responses, in this case RA, RB, and RC, can be used by the client to obtain information without telling the servers what the information is. There is another flavor of PIR called computational PIR. So computational PIR is a single server protocol, and that server can be malicious and can try to actively figure out what the client, which information the client is downloading. But given the assumption that this malicious server cannot break crypto, the client can still download the information that it needs without telling the server what the information is. So based on these two flavors of private information retrieval, we designed two different architectures for Tor called information theoretic PIR Tor and computational PIR Tor. But in this talk, I will only focus on information theoretic PIR Tor. Please see the paper for more details about computational PIR Tor. So one of the key questions in our design is which servers in the network should act as the PIR servers. We call that information theoretic PIR only guarantees privacy when there is some assumption about threshold number of servers not colluding. So to answer this question, we know that Tor already places significant trust in its guard relays. And our observation is that three compromised guard relays suffice to undermine user anonymity in Tor. So let's see this. So in the first example here, all the three guard relays are compromised, but the exit relay happens to be malicious. So in this scenario, the adversary can launch what is known as an end-to-end timing analysis attack and break the anonymity of the user. So in the second example, again, all the three guard relays are compromised, but the exit relay is honest. So in this case, the adversary can launch what is known as a selective denial of service attack and deny service to the user. Thus, the only scenario in which a client will receive any service is the scenario in which the exit relay is malicious. And in that scenario, the user anonymity is broken. So given this observation, we propose to use a client set of guard relays to be the directory servers. And our claim is that this choice provides equivalent security to that of the current Tor network. So for example, if at least one guard relay is honest, then information theoretic PIR guarantees us that the adversary does not learn any information about which relays the user queried. And this scenario is equivalent to the current Tor network. On the other hand, if all the guard relays are compromised, then we call that information theoretic PIR does not provide us with any privacy properties. However, in this case, the user anonymity in Tor is undermined anyway. And thus, choosing a client set of guard relays to be PIR servers provides equivalent security to the current Tor network. Next, I will briefly discuss issues pertaining to the organization and the formatting of the database. So in order to respect the Tor's notion of middle and exit relays, we propose to have two separate databases for middles and exits. Furthermore, in order to preserve the notion of exit policies, we propose to set some few standardized exit policies and relays in the exit database is grouped based on their exit policy. So in this example, the first four relays, E1 to E4, have exit policy 1. Relays E5 to E6 have exit policy 2. And our architecture can tolerate a few number of outliers which do not fall to any of the standardized exit classes, and these relays are grouped together. So we propose that all clients can download this group of non-standard exit policies, just like in the current Tor network. And finally, in order to load balance the network, we propose that relays in these databases be sorted based on their capacity or available bandwidth. So for example, the middle database is fully sorted based on available bandwidth, while the exit relay is sorted within each exit policy group. So for example, all relays in the exit policy group 1 are sorted based on available bandwidth, and similarly for exit policy group 2. So we'll now briefly summarize the ITPIR Tor architecture. So similar to the Tor network, there is a trusted directory authority, which maintains the PIR databases for middle and exit relays. This information is signed and propagated to PIR directory servers, which in our protocol are also guard relays. Now, a user wishing to communicate anonymously first contacts its set of guard relays and downloads signed meta information about these directory servers. So this information includes the number of relays in each database, the boundaries between the exit policies, and so on. So based on this meta information, a user then selects which relays to query for. And this is performed in a load balanced fashion. For example, a user can choose to query for a particular relay based on its position in the database. And recall that since the database is sorted based on capacity, this performs load balancing. Next, a user can perform 18 PIR queries, one for 18 PIR queries for both middle and exit databases. So here we perform a small optimization, and we note that our guard relay already learns the identity of the middle relay. So there is no need to perform a PIR for the middle relay. Thus, the middle relays can be downloaded directly by contacting a particular guard relay, while the exits are still queried by the PIR protocol. Now observe that if a particular middle information is queried from a particular guard relay, say guard relay 1, then guard relay 1 must be used as the first relay when the particular middle relay is being used as the second relay. And this preserves the anonymity of the network. And finally, based on the PIR response, the clients have enough information to build circuits for the next 3 hours. I will now present results for a performance evaluation. So we use a multi-server information theoretic PRR scheme called PERSI, which is based on Ian Goldberg's paper in Oakland 2007. For evaluation, we used a machine with 2.5 gigahertz processor running Ubuntu Linux. And for the parameters in our evaluation, we chose values based on the current Tor network. For example, for the relay descriptor size, we set the value to be 2100 bytes, which is the maximum relay descriptor size in the current network, while we also set the size of the exit database to be half the size of the middle database, which is also the case in the current Tor network. So our methodology is to vary the number of relays in the network and compute the following quantities of interest. The first is the total communication in the network, and the second is the corresponding server computation at the guard relays. So this plot illustrates the per client communication overhead as a function of number of relays in the network. So here the red line corresponds to a full download of the database, while the green and the blue lines correspond to download of 18 exits and one exit relay, respectively. So first, let's see what happens in the current Tor network. So in the current Tor network, there are roughly about 2,000 relays in the network. And the average per client overhead for the period of 3 hours is about 1.1 megabytes. Now, if the user is interested in building only a single circuit, it only needs to query for a single exit database. And the corresponding cost for that is only 12 kilobytes. Even if we account for the fact that a user needs to perform 18 queries so as to be able to build enough circuits for a 3 hour interval, the corresponding cost is only 216 kilobytes. But this illustrates that even in the current Tor network, our proposed architecture provides communication savings to the order of 5x to 100x. Moreover, as the number of relays in the system increases, the advantage of using PRR Tor over the current Tor network also increases. And this is because while the cost of a full download scales linearly with the number of relays in the network, the cost of using PRR Tor scales sublinearly with the number of relays. So for example, at about 250,000 relays, the communication advantage of using PRR Tor with 18 queries is a factor of 100 smaller than the full download of the database. And this factor improves to 3 orders of magnitude if a user is interested in only building a single circuit. So this massive savings has come at a cost of servers performing some computation. So let's see what that cost is. So this figure illustrates the server computation cost as a function of number of relays for the two scenarios where a user is interested in building 18 circuits over 3 hours and only a single circuit over 3 hours. And we can see that at the size of the current Tor network, the server computation, and this is the server computation for a single client, is less than 0.5 seconds. So this is very, very feasible. Even when the number of servers increases to about 100,000 relays, the corresponding server computation per client is only 10 seconds. And now notice that the guard relay can service different clients spread over a 3 hour interval. And also observe that this 10 second computation cost does not impact the latency at the user because PRR is performed much before the users actually need the circuits. So in this slide, I will summarize some of the scaling scenarios in Tor and compare the cost with the current Tor network. So for example, we've already seen that in the current Tor network, using information theoretic PRR is a factor of 5 better than Tor network. While based on the figure shown in the previous slide, we can compute the per CPU percentage utilization for each guard relay is only 0.4%. And this cost has been estimated based on the number of clients in the network, which is 250,000. Now let us consider the scenario where both the number of relays and the number of clients in the system increase by a factor of 10. So in the new scenario, there are 20,000 relays and 2.5 million clients. Now a full download in Tor would cost about 11 megabytes, while the corresponding cost in information theoretic PRR is only 0.5 megabytes. So this is a factor of 22 improvement. On the other hand, the percentage CPU utilization is only 4.25%, which is very feasible. And notice that this is percentage utilization for a single core. But this scenario also illustrates that had the number of clients been a factor of 100, the percentage CPU utilization would still only be roughly about 40%, which, while high, is still plausible. So finally, let's see the scenario where all the clients in the network become relays with the same distribution of guards, middles, and exits as in the current Tor network. So in this scenario, the per client communication overhead in Tor is a staggering 137 megabytes, while the corresponding cost in information theoretic PIR Tor is only 1.7 megabytes. This is more than two orders of magnitude. And observe that the cost of IT PIR in this case is roughly equivalent to what the Tor clients are using today anyway, which is about 1.1 megabytes. So very interestingly, we observe that the percentage CPU utilization in our protocol is still only 0.4%. And this is because while the number of relays in the database increases, which should increase the server computation cost, the number of guard relays to support the client has also increased. And thus, the percentage core utilization remains the same. But this indicates the scalability of our protocol. So finally, I note that private information retrieval can be used to replace the descriptor download process in Tor. And the use of private information retrieval improves scalability. And we have seen that a factor of 10 improved scalability in the network is very feasible, while it may be plausible to scale the network even by a factor of 100. And moreover, this increase in scalability has not come at the cost of security. The security properties of PIR Tor depend on very well understood primitive of private information retrieval. And as a side conclusion, I note that PIR can have practical consequences in today's networks. And with that, I conclude this presentation. Thanks for your attention.
Well, people are getting their courage up. Let me ask one question. So you mentioned, this is a little open-ended, but you mentioned that you did both computational and information theoretic
Here.
Right. I was wondering if you could take a minute or two just to summarize your results on the computational side.
So computational PIR is very easy to integrate into the current Tor network because our current protocol requires all the guard relays to update. Well, the computational PIR protocol is only a single server protocol, so the directory servers as they exist in the current networks can upgrade as per their convenience and clients can start taking advantage of them. In terms of the results, in terms of the size of today's network, computational PIR Tor does not provide any advantage over the current Tor network. But as the size of the network increases, even computational PIR Tor is more results in communication costs being lower than the Tor network.
Last question, though, is there any chance of this stuff making it into the Tor code base?
So the implementation that we use for PIR Tor is open source. I think it's available on Ian's homepage, and maybe Roger will take a stab at that.
Yeah, so that sort of leads into the question that I was going to ask. I'm trying to work through the details here. So neat stuff. I think it has a lot of promise. The next question that I would ask for you, you had your security argument about how you can use the three guards because those three guards are, if they're all compromised, you're screwed anyway.
Right.
There are a lot of variations on the how do you measure Tor security question. And every year we come up with new versions of it in terms of this is what we're defending against or here's this new attack and so on. So I worry that the subtlety we're developing in terms of analyzing how Tor works right now with guards, doesn't easily map into your security argument. So that would be my suggestion for what to explore next.
So I'd like to point out that even if all three guard relays are compromised, and I think what you're hinting at is that maybe there is a way to defend against the selective denial of service attack, in that scenario, the only information that's leaked by a protocol is the scenario when the exit relay is honest, in which case the guard relays learn the identity of the exit relays. And in that case, our protocol would provide equivalent security to that of a two-hop Tor network. But that is assuming that there is some way to defend against the selective denial of service attack.
So another variation there are other designs that are working on switching to one guard node, We only use three to begin with because sometimes guards were crappy, and if you choose all crappy guards, then you hate Tor. So it would, if we can fix that, then maybe we should switch to one, which makes guards even more efficient and makes this approach not work anymore. So there's a lot of contradictory design stuff going on that needs more thinking.
Right. So I want to point out, in that case, you could use computational PIR.
Okay.
Thanks.
Let's thank the speaker.